Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Each of us has a story about our journey to faith, as does Mary Doe. In that story, you can name the people who were your guide, who guided you. Be a family member, a pastor, a friend. Nobody's story includes a guidance by the state of Missouri. And that's a good thing, because the state of Missouri should not be in the business of preaching. When Mary Doe arrived at the offices of Planned Parenthood in May of 2015, her journey led her to believe that the tissue she was carrying, she was going to have aborted, was simply that, tissue, part of her body, no different than an appendix, and that she could, in good conscience, have it removed by medical procedure without consideration of its future condition. And in steps on Mary Doe's journey, the state of Missouri. The state of Missouri steps in and says, oh, wait a minute, little lady, you're about to commit murder. That tissue you are carrying is a human being. We'd like you to sign this book acknowledging receipt of our belief that it's a human being. We would like you to submit to an ultrasound where you can be offered the opportunity to hear the fetal heartbeat, and then we would like you to sit for 3 days and think about it. Mary Doe took action, anticipating that this was going to happen, and brought a letter and said, I don't believe it. In my heart and soul, this is tissue. This is an appendix. Spare me the book. Spare me the ultrasound. Spare me the waiting period. I would like to have a medical procedure today. And Planned Parenthood, as they were required to do under the law, said, sorry, we can't do that. And they forced her into a choice, a Hobson's choice. She either gets her medical procedure, or she proceeds to subject herself to the informed consent laws in a manner that is inconsistent with her religious beliefs. They want to change her mind. They want to change her heart. They want to change the way she sees herself in the cosmos. It is a bedrock principle of our culture, of our country, that we choose for ourselves what to believe by way of a religious belief. It is not the business of government to tell us that. And so, when they put Mary into this position of having to make a choice, they infringed upon her liberty. She had to spend 3 days in time out. They made her pay for it. She had to finance the state of Missouri telling her its religious beliefs. And she felt guilt. Why? Because she was clearly an outsider.
Mr. McNaughton, what relief are you requesting in this court?
I'm requesting that the statute be enjoined from enforcement as to Mary Doe and other women like her who come to Planned Parenthood and say, no, thank you, I've already made up my mind.
Can you address why that relief isn't moot, that request and your claim isn't moot, since you didn't bring it up while she was seeking the abortion, but have brought it up now after she's already obtained it?
No, we sought it. We.
Well, this is here after she's already obtained the abortion.
I'm sorry.
How does that give you any relief to grant an injunction now since she's already obtained the abortion? You're not asking for damages. You're asking for an injunction against enforcement of it. But at this point, it's already occurred. She's already had the abortion.
The petition was filed during the waiting period. Okay. The petition was filed in that interval between when she went to Planned Parenthood and received the message, all right, and the time that She then had to go home and wait, or went to a hotel
and waited for 3 days. And did you attempt to get an expedited review at that time to get an injunction against enforcement of it against her, at which time all the arguments clearly are relevant? But I'm wondering, is it too late now for us to address them after the fact, since she in fact got her abortion?
No, I don't. I don't believe so.
Tell me why not.
Well, because it's the nature of an infringement upon a religious belief. Okay, and really, at its heart, what she is seeking is acknowledgement from the government, from you, okay, that her beliefs are valid. If you simply say to her, well, it's moot, come again next time, okay, she goes home believing that you've given the state of Missouri a pass. You've given the state of Missouri a pass. You know, traditional mootness analysis, this is the kind of situation that is capable of repetition, yet evading review. In our case, it turns out, the Friday that we went to court, I didn't know this because I'm from New Jersey, it was Harry Truman's birthday, and the courts are closed. So there was no way that we could get that relief on that particular day. Yes, I think that, you know, the relief, we're here to vindicate a principle. And to simply evade that under the doctrine of mootness just puts it off for another day. I recognize that I'm here asking you for a very heavy lift. The state of Missouri put Mary Doe between a rock and a hard place when she went to get her abortion. The people of the state of Missouri, in their wisdom, have put you between the rock and a hard place. Do you uphold the informed consent statute, or do you apply RFRA? Do you let Mary Doe and people of her belief get abortions on demand, or do you let the state of Missouri mount the pulpit in the waiting room of Planned Parenthood and preach religious doctrine? I do not envy you. It is a difficult decision. And I suggest to you a principle to guide you through it. This is a bedrock principle. And the persons standing between that bedrock principle and its being fractured by government is you. Each one of you. That's what judges do. They protect individual rights.
And what creates the presumption that the statute that says life begins at conception is solely based on a religious tenet?
It's not a question of presumption. You just have to look at the face of the language. The Eighth Circuit said it's the adoption of a theory of life. There is no scientific basis for it. It's just a proposition. It's like saying Jesus rose from the dead. Okay? Now, you can believe that. You can point to history and faith and how you got to that belief. But you would be appalled if the Missouri legislature legislated that into law. It would be appalling. It's appalling that the state of Missouri legislates into law that a human life, a human being, as we commonly understand a human being to be, comes into existence at conception.
Can you address the more specific attacks the state has made on your argument? Is that she may have paid for the X-ray, but that she was not required to do so by the statute, that she wasn't required to read what was given to her, and that she isn't seeking damages, I guess, for the 3 days. So while these are her beliefs, is that an abortion is perfectly fine and is not the killing of a human being, the statute doesn't directly contradict that, as opposed to say if a doctor brought suit and was forced to say when human life began and didn't believe in that, that would be a First Amendment issue, which some courts have addressed already. But how is it for her just receiving that?
I'm sorry, ma'am. I really don't quite understand the question.
Well, the state has made specific objections to your argument that she, in fact, was forced to act contrary to her religious beliefs, assuming they're her religious beliefs and that she holds them and that they're in conflict with the statement made in the statute. She wasn't forced to say she agreed with them. She was given a brochure but wasn't required to read it. And she wasn't, according to the state, wasn't required to pay for the sonogram, even though apparently Planned Parenthood forced her to do so, but the statute didn't. Can you address those arguments for me?
I understand the question. She, as a condition of getting medical treatment, she had to sign something that says, I got the book, okay? Inherently, in and of itself, trivial. But then, so is making a Indian young man wear his hair inside of his shirt. She had to submit to an ultrasound, required to do that, to be offered the opportunity to hear the fetal heartbeat. She had to lie on a gurney. She had to have medical instruments put on top of her.
Does the ultrasound have any purpose for the procedure other than for creating the opportunity to hear the fetal heartbeat?
As alleged in the complaint, no. Our allegation in the complaint was that it was solely for the purposes of complying with the statute.
Is there something in the statute that says she actually has to have it? I thought it just said she has to have the opportunity to have it.
Can't she just say no? She has to be offered the opportunity to hear the fetal heartbeat, but you don't know if there is a fetal heartbeat to be offered until you conduct an ultrasound.
Yeah, but it doesn't say she's got to have an ultrasound, does it? I mean, you can say, we want to offer you the opportunity to have an ultrasound so you can hear the fetal heartbeat. Maybe it's been interpreted that way. What is your basis for saying that that's what that means?
Because that's what she had to do.
But she could refuse it, couldn't she?
Let me just finish.
What she had to do was certify that she received the booklet.
She had to certify she had to receive the book. She had to go and wait for 3 days. She had to submit to the ultrasound.
The state argues that she could refuse that.
Well, she could, but she wouldn't get her abortion. That's the Hobson's choice. That's what she's forced to do.
The 24-hour waiting period has been upheld previously by the courts, hasn't it?
Has not been.
This was 72, but a 24-hour waiting period has been upheld.
That's correct, but not under the religion clauses. Our contention is that this is not a Roe versus Wade due process claim. This is a claim under the religion clauses. If she arrives there believing legitimately that she's not committing murder, the state of Missouri has no business trying to talk her out of it.
Counselor, you're out.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court, John Sauer on behalf of the state in this particular case. I want to start by addressing some of the questions that came up in the opening argument. Regarding the ultrasound, what the statute said is that the person has to be offered an opportunity to have an ultrasound and hear the fetal heartbeat. The best interpretation of that statute is that, as Judge Russell said, she is entitled to decline the opportunity to have an ultrasound.
So it's the position of the state that an ultrasound does not have to be conducted unless the person says they want the opportunity to hear the fetal heartbeat.
Yeah, I read the plain language of the statute to say that the opportunity has to be offered. Now, as I understand it, the ultrasound is routinely conducted because it's the principal manner for ascertaining gestational age. And I think it's very relevant that in this particular case, at page 75 of the legal file, the letter she delivered to Planned Parenthood
said... That's a factual issue that's not really before us, is it?
Well, I do think there's an allegation in the complaint because the complaint incorporates by reference this letter she delivered to Planned Parenthood where she says, I give you permission to physically examine me to ascertain the gestational age. And that is done by ultrasound. So I believe there was actually a consent to the ultrasound. But I agree, the court need not reach that issue. It is legally, all the court needs to see is that you must be offered the opportunity to have an ultrasound. And the very next sentence of the statute, 188.027.14, goes on to say that you can satisfy that opportunity by giving a list of providers in the community, including those who provide it free of charge. So there's no legal requirement that she must pay for the ultrasound. That's an issue in this state.
But there's no legal requirement that she have it at all. You're telling us it's the state's position. She must just be offered the opportunity to have it.
Yes, absolutely.
And Mr. McNaughton says that, well, she also has to be offered the opportunity to hear the heartbeat, and that means she's got to have the ultrasound. Or is that simply an explanation of what would happen if she had the...
I believe the latter thing you said is true. What the statute says, I think I have the exact language right here, that the abortion provider must provide the woman with the opportunity to view at least 72 hours prior to the abortion an active ultrasound of the unborn child and hear the heartbeat. So the opportunity is to view and hear. So if you're offered the opportunity, hey, you can have an ultrasound to view a picture of your child and to hear the heartbeat, I believe this is the plain language of the statute.
But then your opponent argues that if she refuses those things, then she'd be denied the procedure.
That's not the way that I read the statute, and I think the plain text of the statute governs. If the provider says, here's an opportunity to have an ultrasound, and she says, I do not wish to have an ultrasound, then the statute has been satisfied. Now, my understanding is the ultrasound is routinely provided to ascertain gestational age, which you have to do.
The provider understandably wants to be careful not to contravene the statute, particularly because of the somewhat antagonistic historical relationship between the state and Planned Parenthood, I would imagine. So is there, is this an official position of the state that it's not required?
I think the official position,
it was just required by Planned Parenthood.
I think the official position of the state is that the plain language of the statute is what should govern, and I believe that that is the plain language of the statute. Opportunity must be offered, an opportunity to view and an opportunity to hear. My understanding is that Planned Parenthood does this not because it's required, but because they use the ultrasound to ascertain gestational age.
Can you address whether we have to, in order to resolve this case, reach the question of whether a 72-hour waiting period is constitutional, or is that moot at this point, or is that unnecessary for this
court? Absolutely not. The court does. That is not even presented as a claim in this particular case. So there is no undue burden challenge under federal substantive due process to anything in this particular case. There are state RFRA claims, right? And then there are two federal claims. One is an Establishment Clause claim, and the other is a free exercise claim that is affirmatively abandoned on appeal.
So our question is whether the 72-hour waiting period violates her religious rights, not whether it's an undue burden.
Under state RFRA only.
So can you address opposing counsel's arguments that it does?
Yes, absolutely right.
You said he affirmatively abandoned the free exercise claim, correct?
On appeal, yeah. I disagree with what the Court of Appeals said on this issue in its transfer opinion. At page 11 of the opening brief, here is what the plaintiff said. Mary Doe does not dispute the trial court's finding that if she fails to state a claim for violation of RFRA, she also fails to state a claim for violation of the free exercise clause, and therefore only raised a point relied on and only briefed and argued the RFRA claims. There is absolutely no briefing regarding the independent free exercise claim. The only briefing in the opening brief has to do with the state law RFRA claim. And that's a true statement of the law. If he loses on RFRA, he's going to lose on a free exercise anyway. So the only relevance of the free exercise claim is whether or not it was a basis for the jurisdictional transfer. We took the position in the Court of Appeals that the Establishment Clause claim is so clearly foreclosed by the U.S. Supreme Court's opinion in Harris against McGray, McGowan against Maryland, Gonzales against Carhart, Webster, all these decisions reject the notion that when the state says life begins at conception, it's in some way adopting a religious belief as opposed to a political, philosophical, and scientific belief. There is a very strong line of Supreme Court decisions. No decision to the contrary has been cited on the other side. So the Establishment Clause need not, I think, detain the court for very long. On the state RFRA claims, we are seeking affirmance of the lower court's decision on the reasoning that was adopted by the trial court, which was that the state RFRA requires the allegation of a specific act or refusal to act of the plaintiff that is motivated by religion, that the state is restricting in some way. And I believe that the trial court correctly determined that actually what's being alleged is a religious disagreement with the state's conduct. So the trial court said, no, there's no allegation in the complaint that she was motivated by her religious beliefs to have the abortion at all, or that the religion motivated the termination faster than the 72 hours.
Well, I think she's arguing that being forced to receive the brochure is itself a violation of her religious beliefs, and analogizing to some of the federal cases that say just being forced to recognize that Obamacare covers certain kinds of procedures is itself a religious violation.
That argument about signing the certification and acknowledging she's received it was never raised in any of the briefing. The first time it was ever raised was in the Court of Appeals transfer opinion. So Zubik was not cited by her. Geneva College was not cited by her. If you look at the petition carefully, you see that she does not allege that she has any religious objection to filling out the certification form. In fact, the petition fairly read alleges the opposite, because at paragraph 71 of the petition, deposition, she says, here are the various acts that I had to engage in that I otherwise wouldn't have had to engage in if the informed consent law weren't in place. And she mentions, the only place she mentions in the petition is signing the certification form. She goes on in paragraph 72 to say, here are the acts that I allege, my acts that were restricted by the state, and she does not allege that particular thing. And in the RFRA context, the courts have insisted on a careful and specific and precise articulation in the complaint of what it is that you're actually saying is restricted by the state to prevent essentially what we have here, which is an attempt by a litigant to say, for religious reasons, I don't like what the state is doing, and therefore I want to use RFRA to dictate the state's action. That's why we've relied heavily on the briefs in the Kamerling case and the Bowen against Roy case, where the D.C. Circuit and the U.S. Supreme Court said, look, you can't use the free exercise clause, or in Kamerling, the federal RFRA, to dictate what the state is doing. And if you look at the allegations in the petition, and this is the analysis of the trial court, the allegations in the petition are not, I was motivated by my religion to have an abortion or to not wait once I decided to have an abortion. The petition alleges that under her religion, she should be free to make the abortion decision free from any interference or suasion or influence from any third party, especially not the state. So if you go through paragraph 27 of the petition, she alleges things like, my body should be inviolable and subject to my will alone, and I alone should decide whether, when, and how to have the abortion. So what the petition alleges is that her religion says she should be allowed to make the abortion decision based on any reason she wants, any non-religious reason that she wants, and the state shouldn't be interfering with it. So there isn't a act or refusal to act that's motivated by religious.
Assuming that's true, and her religion does, for present purposes, require that, can you address whether this was a violation of that?
We've argued in the ground on which the trial court rules is there is no act or refusal to act that is motivated by religious belief. But we contend that the state can and indeed should affirm if it disagrees with that position, which the court should not. But if it does, our position is that the court can affirm on the alternative ground that, in fact, the three elements of the RFRA are satisfied as a matter of law here. And that is whether or not this is a neutral law of general applicability that does not discriminate against or among religions, whether or not there's a compelling state interest that's being advanced here, and whether or not it is not, quote, unduly restrictive under all the circumstances.
But you don't believe we need to reach that issue if we decide in the state's favor on the first two grounds?
Exactly. The threshold issue is that, 1.302.2 says that she must allege a, quote, act or refusal to act that is substantially motivated by religion. And in fact, what she alleges is a religious disagreement with the activities of the state. No specific act or refusal to act that she says, my religion says I must or ought to do this or do it at this particular time or not pay this money. She's saying, I, for religious reasons, disagree with the state's decision to make me wait to take particular times. And let me put it this way. She's not a bad believer under her religion. There's no allegation that she's a bad believer because she, waited 72 hours before having an abortion. Her allegation is the state is a bad believer under her particular religious beliefs. The state is doing this. So it's quite distinct from the cases like the Zubik case that the Court of Appeals addressed, where there's a specific articulation of this is the act that I cannot engage in under my religion. In that particular case, the allegation was, if I submit this form to the Department of Health and Human Services, then that's setting a chain of events in motion that I'll be morally responsible for under my religious beliefs. Here, that allegation is not present. She's saying, for religious reasons, I think it's irrelevant and unnecessary and offensive that the state makes me be exposed to this information. Here's a way to look at it. Think about the booklet. She alleges now, or she's arguing now, that the fact that I had to receive this booklet violated my religion. But the letter she submitted to Planned Parenthood said, I've already read the booklet. So reading the booklet does not violate her religion. What she objects to is that the state is taking this action of making people read the booklet or using the booklet as a precondition to having an abortion. So it's very important. I want to emphasize, too, that the Kamerling case that we've emphasized in our pleadings requires this very specific, careful, precise articulation of the act or refusal to act that's actually being objected to. In the Kamerling case, there was a prisoner who said, I object on religious grounds to the, quote, collection and sampling of my DNA for use in the CODIS database, which, all prisoners, when they enter the Bureau of Prisons, if they have a qualifying felony, have to do. That particular prisoner said, oh, I object to the collection and sampling. And the D.C. Circuit said, if we carefully look at what you're alleging, you're not alleging that it violates your religious belief to, submit to a buccal swab and provide the DNA. You're only arguing that everything the state does with that DNA sample violates your religion because you think it will usher in the Antichrist. It's very similar here. This This religious believer is not saying, hey, my religion says I must have the abortion on May 8th or May 12th, or I must make any particular decision with respect to the abortion. She says, my religion says the state can't take all these objections. So it's only the activity of the state that is being objected to in the petition. That was the conclusion of the trial court, and I believe it's a fair reading of the petition. I'm sorry.
Can you address the mootness and standing issues? Opposing counsel says this doesn't have the problems that federal similar case had of standing because it was brought during the period when she was seeking an abortion, and it would evade review if we said it became moot after that.
Yeah, the petition was filed during that period between May 8th and May 12th when she was undergoing the waiting procedure, but there were no affirmative actions taken at that time to actually assert or insist upon her rights. There was no application for a TRO hearing. You know, all that was done was file the petition, and the case proceeded in its ordinary course. So we can see that the doctrine of capable of repetition yet evading review that he alluded to in oral argument has frequently been applied in the abortion context. In Roe versus Wade itself, there was a holding that it was not capable of repetition yet evading review. But I think those cases can be distinguished on the ground that there actually was an attempt by the litigant to actually enforce the rights in a timely manner. What she actually did was file a petition and then proceed with an abortion. So if the court were inclined to dismiss on the grounds of mootness, the grounds for distinguishing those cases, I believe, was that in this particular case, there was a kind of sleeping on the rights. There really was no active attempt to actually get those rights enforced in a timely fashion. Certainly there was no application for a TRO hearing. I don't know whether or not it was Truman Day or not the day it was filed, but certainly there was a four-day period there when it could have been filed and no attempt like that was made. So that's the way that I would distinguish those particular cases. But we do concede that that doctrine has been frequently applied in the specific context of abortion. Unless there are additional questions for the court, I would end my presentation there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I heard something today that Mary Jo did not hear in 2015. You have the opportunity to say no. If the state of Missouri had said to her at the time, well, you have the opportunity to say no. You have the opportunity to.
But she was talking to Planned Parenthood, not the state, right?
I'm sorry?
She wasn't talking to the state. She was Planned Parenthood, apparently.
She was talking to Planned Parenthood, who was providing the law. If the law said, you have the opportunity to say no, okay, then it would be a different case. Then you would be talking about whether.
Well, what is wrong with his interpretation based upon the plain meaning of that statute, that all that's required is the opportunity for the ultrasound? What is there in that that you suggest is wrong?
That she'd be offered the opportunity to hear the fetal heartbeat.
Right. So
because
offers both. Gives her the opportunity for both.
She was in fact offered the opportunity, and she said no. She was forced to act, and she was forced to act in accordance with her religious beliefs that the fetal heartbeat was irrelevant. And because she was forced to act in a manner that was inconsistent with her religious beliefs.
But who forced her?
Who forced her? The state of Missouri.
How?
By requiring that she be offered the opportunity to have a fetal heartbeat.
So it's up to this court to interpret what the statute says and if it required her to then submit to the sonogram.
The statute requires her that be offered the opportunity.
That's
in her case.
What that means is a legal question. Is that correct?
Well, in the facts of this case, mm-hmm. she was offered the fetal heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, because she accepted the opportunity for the ultrasound.
No, because she had no choice. She either.
Well,
who told her she had no choice? The state wasn't there. There's
the
a statute.
Wasn't.
You and I can read the statute.
Yes.
Did Planned Parenthood tell her that they would not perform the abortion unless she had an ultrasound?
The state of Missouri, excuse me, Planned Parenthood, after receiving this booklet, after receiving her letter, just ignored it. Okay. They went forward with the procedures that they were required to do by the state of Missouri.
Or what they interpreted they were required to do.
Well, certainly with respect to the three-day waiting period, they understood that's what they had to do.
So okay. What is the religious objection to the three-day waiting period? How does that violate RFRA?
Because she's being put in timeout. It's like requiring a...
But what about a religion doesn't allow her to wait?
Because she does not believe in promotion.
I understand. But why is the three-day wait a violation of her religious beliefs?
Because her religious belief is that she does not conduct herself in a manner that cedes control over her body to the state of Missouri in this instance.
She's not alleging it was an undue burden on her ability to get an abortion.
It wasn't an undue burden.
That's not in your allegations. You don't have a separate count on that. Your count is only under RFRA. Is that correct?
I'm sorry.
Your claim is only under RFRA. Is that correct?
We have a RFRA claim and a first exercise claim.
But you don't have an undue burden claim in your petition.
No, it's not a due process claim. But the analysis is similar because the question is, does the requirement, the legal requirement, impose a substantial burden on the exercise of a religious belief? Okay. Mary Doe, in the exercise of her religious belief, asked for an abortion on demand, a medical procedure. Give me an appendectomy. All right? There's no medical need in that instance to make somebody wait 3 days.
Counsel.
You're only making them. I'm sorry.
You're out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
It's a well-argued case on both sides.